Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from historic Rome County, Tennessee, and I hope that you guys are having an absolutely fabulous Easter, because I tell you what, I certainly have had so far. It's always great to spend time with family, spend plenty of time with the people that you care about, and more importantly, on this Resurrection Sunday, getting to spend some additional time in worship. I mean, there is just nothing better. Problem is, there's a ton of things going on right now that absolutely require some discussion. We're going to have to talk about some stuff. I have ordinarily done the Easter broadcast. In fact, I usually reserve it to have pastors and folks of that nature to come on, and we discuss current situation with how society's treating religion and things of that nature. And there's absolutely no question that while that's an important topic, there's also no question that there are times that is more important than others. Times when Christianity comes under attack. Times when there are nothing more than wolves at the door, ready to attack. And I'm afraid that we're at a point like that right now. We face a time where values and morality are scoffed at, where those who choose a Christian path are made fun of and treated like pariahs. So this Easter, we need to discuss some of those items. But before we get into that, I did want to start out talking a little bit about the framework for this new deal with Iran that the Obama administration has announced so wholeheartedly and ready to just get out there and discuss it. But, you know, there's some things we really need to keep in mind when it comes down to it. Now, as most of you are aware of, this past week, it was announced that a framework for a deal had been worked out. The State Department's been trumpeting victory. Liberal media has lauded the diplomats' efforts with such great imagery as marathon stretches of late-night negotiations and coffee-fueled agreements. Even the occupier has been saying such wonderfully idiotic things as, "It's a good deal that meets our core objectives," that this framework could cut off every path that Iran could take to develop a nuclear weapon. Funny, isn't it? Oh, and my favorite, if Iran cheats, the world will know it. Well, finally, something that Obama and I can agree on. The world will know if Iran cheats. The world will know because we'll see the mushroom cloud rising over Israel or over an American city or worse than that, both. And who knows where else? But here's what the media continues to ignore. There is no deal. There's just a framework for a deal. And there's no indication whatsoever that the Iranians have accepted the framework. But, you know, before I go too far off the rails on a rant here, let's take a look at the framework, shall we? As it has been announced and released, there are a few keys parts of the framework. And when it comes to enrichment, Iran has agreed to reduce by approximately two-thirds its installed centrifuges. Iran will go from having about 19,000 to roughly about 6,000 and a little over 100. Now, 6,104 or 5 or what have you under this deal, with only 5,060 of those enriching uranium for 10 years. All 6,100 and blah, blah, blah will be IR1s, Iran's first generation centrifuge. Iran has agreed to not enrich uranium over 3.67% for at least 15 years. Now, that's the level where it starts moving into weapons grade. It still needs a bit further, of course. For those of you who aren't nuclear physicists and aren't that familiar with nuclear weapons, below 3.67% is relatively safe, although it doesn't take much to enrich it further. Iran has agreed to reduce its current stockpile of about 10,000 kilograms of low-enriched uranium to about 300 kilograms of 3.67% LEUs for 15 years. All excess centrifuges and enrichment infrastructure will be placed at IAEA monitored storage facilities and will be used only as replacements for operating centrifuges and equipment. Iran has agreed not to build any new facilities for the purpose of enriching uranium for 15 years. Iran's breakout timeline, the time that it would take for Iran to acquire enough fissionable material for one weapon, is currently assessed to be 2 to 3 months. That timeline will be extended to at least 1 year for a duration of at least 10 years under this framework. Now remember, this is a framework. It hasn't been agreed to. This isn't a deal. So when it says Iran has agreed, Iran will agree, Iran will do this, this means in accordance to the framework, they'll have to make that arrangement before we can move forward. And any part of this framework can be eliminated when a final deal is made. More to the point, there's very little here that can be done as far as monitoring the main facilities. But before I get too far into that, let's take a look at some of the other points. Iran will convert its facility at Fort Dow so that it is no longer used. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very sorry about that space. Unfortunately, had a technical issue that cut us off midstream. I've had technical issues the last couple of weeks, nothing quite as bad as that one. I apologize. I thank you for bearing with us. And now we'll try to pick up where we left off, because we were talking about the Fordow facility. talking about the framework for the so-called agreement. Iran has agreed not to enrich uranium at its Fort Al facility for at least 15 years. Iran has agreed to convert its Fort Al facility so that it is used for peaceful purposes only into a nuclear physics technology research center. Anybody want to take a guess as to what they'll be researching? Iran has agreed to not conduct research and development associated with uranium enrichment at Fort Al for 15 years. Iran will not have any fissible material at Fort Al for 15 years. Almost two-thirds of Fort Al centrifuges and infrastructure will be removed. The remaining centrifuges will not enrich uranium. All centrifuges and related infrastructure will be placed under IAEA monitoring, or so the framework says. Again, this is the terms of the framework, not anything that Iran's actually agreed to just yet. But let's continue. Iran will only enrich uranium at the Natanz facility, with only 5,060 IR-1 first-generation centrifuges for 10 years. Now, evidently, according to the framework, Iran must agree to only enrich uranium using its first-generation models of centrifuges at the one location where most of their uranium enrichment is already taking place, by the way, for 10 years, removing its most advanced centrifuges. Iran will remove the 1,000 IR-2M centrifuges currently installed at this location and place them in IAEA monitored storage for 10 years. Iran will not use its IR-2, IR-4, IR-5, or IR-6 and IR-8 models to produce enriched uranium for at least 10 years. Iran will engage its limited research and development with its advanced centrifuges according to a schedule and parameters which have been agreed to by the P5+1. That's the name of the group of countries that got together to hammer out this deal, FYI. For 10 years, enrichment and enrichment research and development will be limited to ensure a breakout timeline of at least 1 year. Beyond 10 years, Iran will abide by its enrichment and enrichment R&D plan submitted to the IAEA and pursuant to the JCPOA under the additional protocol, resulting in certain limitations on enrichment capacity. Inspections and transparency. This is the fun part. We had a lot of fun with this part when it came to Saddam Hussein, if you recall. He liked to play games with the international team monitoring their weapons production, the IAEA. At any rate, the IAEA will have regular access to all of Iran's nuclear facilities, including to Iran's enrichment facility and its former enrichment facility at Fort Al, and including the use of the most up-to-date modern monitoring technologies. Okay, good luck with that. Inspectors will have access to the supply chain that supports Iran's nuclear program. The new transparency and inspection mechanisms will closely monitor materials and or components to prevent diversion to a secret program. Really? I'd like a little more detail on that, please. Inspectors will have access to uranium mines and continuous surveillance at uranium mills where Iran produces yellowcake. The time frame there, 25 years. Inspectors will have continuous surveillance of Iran's centrifuge rotors and bellows production and storage facilities for All right, ladies and gentlemen, having continuations of the technical issues, I apologize. This is really making it difficult to continue to make a cogent point. I humbly apologize. For those of you who are regular listeners, you know, we don't normally have this kind of issue. We've been known to have a technical glitch now and then, but at any rate, going to soldier on here and make every effort to get to the points because, you know, they're kind of important. Continuing with our discussion, we'll pick up during the inspection and transparency clauses of the framework. Now, according to the framework, inspectors, of course, will have continuous surveillance of the centrifuge rotors and bellows, productions and storage facilities for 20 years. I already covered this, but I want to make sure I don't miss anything. Iran centrifuge manufacturing base will be frozen and under continuous surveillance. Yeah, right. All centrifuges and enrichment infrastructure removed from Fordo and Natchez will be placed under continuous monitoring by the IAEA. A dedicated procurement channel for Iran's nuclear program will be established to monitor and approve on a case-by-case basis the supply, sale, and transfer to Iran of certain nuclear-related and dual-use materials and technology, an additional transparency measure. Iran has agreed, according to the framework, keep that in mind, to implement the additional protocol of the IAEA, providing that the IAEA much greater access and information regarding Iran's nuclear program, including both declared and undeclared facilities. So, in other words, they're going to tell them about their secret locations? Don't know about that. I mean, they're secret for a reason, right? At any rate, Iran will be required to grant access to the IAEA to investigate suspicious sites or allegations of a covert enrichment facility, conversion facility, centrifuge production facilities, or yellow cake production facility anywhere in the country. Iran has agreed to implement modified Code 3.1 requiring early notification of construction of new facilities. Iran will implement an agreed set of measures to address the IAEA's concerns regarding the possible military dimensions of its program. Reactors and reprocessing. Iran has agreed to redesign and rebuild a heavy water research reactor based on a design that is agreed to by the P5 Plus One group, which will not produce weapons-grade plutonium and which will support peaceful nuclear research and radioisotopic production. The original core of the reactor, which would have enabled the production of significant quantities of weapons-grade plutonium, will be destroyed or removed from the country. I wonder why they make that addendum. Shouldn't they just say it'll be destroyed? I mean, if Iran can't have it, who do they think should have it? Iran will ship all of its spent fuel from the reactor out of the country for the reactor's lifetime. Also an interesting query. Iran has committed indefinitely to not conduct reprocessing or reprocessing research and development on spent nuclear fuel. Iran will not accumulate heavy water in excess of the needs of the modified reactor and will sell any remaining heavy water on the international market for 15 years. Iran will not build any additional heavy water reactors for 15 years. See, a theme that just seems to keep popping up here. Now, We also have these wonderful little things called sanctions that are in place, and the sanctions are addressed here as well. Some of the key components towards the sanctions in this little lovely framework: Iran will receive sanction relief if it verifiably abides by its commitments. U.S. and the EU nuclear-related sanctions All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm back again. Yes, right now I've got some serious attacks coming from our State Department. They're not happy with me getting this information out, although I'm not the first person to get this information out. So the old joke about the NSA listening in and trying to prevent us common sense conservatives from getting the message out, not sure if it's really a joke at this point. It could be the fact that I've never had this issue, but very rarely do we talk about such a sensitive topic as this. Anyway, I'm going to continue on, and again, I thank you for bearing with me. I hope that we can get this straightened out, but this is something outside of the studio. I'm not certain what the real issue is here, but we'll get on with this before I waste any more time before the next attack on the show happens. At any rate, we were talking about the sanctions that are part of the framework of the deal, and we were talking about the sanctions snapping back in place was the last thing that we mentioned. So the architecture of the U.S. nuclear-related sanctions on Iran will be retained for much of the duration of the deal and allow for a snapback of sanctions in the event of significant non-performance. I wonder who decides what significant non-performance is. No, they just put all the centrifuges back online. That's still not significant. Okay, I'll continue now. All past UN Security Council resolutions on the Iran nuclear issue will be lifted simultaneously with the completion by Iran of nuclear-related actions addressing all key concerns, which, of course, is the enrichment and the transparency. However, core provisions of the UN Security Council resolutions, those that deal with transfers of sensitive technologies and activities, will be reestablished by a new UN Security Council resolution that will endorse the JCPOA and urge its full implementation. It will also create the procurement channel mentioned above, which will serve as a key transparency measure. Important restrictions on conventional arms and ballistic missiles, as well as provisions that allow import restrictions on conventional arms and ballistic missiles, and other provisions that will also allow for related cargo inspections and asset freezes will also be incorporated by the new resolution, assuming that the UN actually passes this, of course. A dispute resolution process will be specified, which enables any JCPOA participant to seek to resolve disagreements about the performance of JCPOA commitments. If an issue of significant non-performance cannot be resolved through that process, then all previous UN sanctions could be reimposed. Not must, not will, could. U.S. sanctions on Iran for terrorism, human rights abuses, and ballistic missiles will remain in place under the deal. Phasing, something important to keep in mind, because remember, Secretary of State John Kerry was very vehement about telling us, each and every one of us, that there were no sunset clauses in this. That wouldn't come to an end. Yet, you'll recall, as I read through these things, there were several different key provisions to this framework where they expired in 10 years or 15 years or 25 years, a couple of them in 20 years. Sounds like a sunset to me. But anyway, the phasing is the key points there. For 10 years, Iran will limit domestic enrichment capability and research and development, ensuring a breakout timeline of at least 1 year. Beyond that, Iran will be bound by its longer-term enrichment and enrichment research and development plan it shared with the P5 plus 1 group. For 15 years, Iran will limit additional elements of its program. For instance, Iran will not build new enrichment facilities or heavy water reactors and will limit its stockpile of enriched uranium and accept enhanced transparency procedures. Important inspections and transparency measures will continue well beyond 15 years, according to the framework. Iran's adherence to the additional protocol of the IAEA is permanent, including its significant access and transparency obligations. The robust inspections of Iran's uranium supply chain will last for 25 years. Even after the period of the most stringent limitations on Iran's nuclear program, Iran will remain a party to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which prohibits Iran's development or acquisition of nuclear weapons and requires the IAEA safeguards on its nuclear program. Now, that is the key and major points of the framework. Now, anybody got anything to say about that? Because as far as I can tell, sounds like a bunch of hooey. I'd very much like to hear any comments, and if anybody would like to give us a call in and discuss this at length or however, you're welcome to call in at 347-426-3550. You can also give us a call toll-free at 888-287-5313. If you're listening live at the blogtalk.com website, you're welcome to hit the Skype button. All those will put you on to the switchboard, raise your hand, and if we continue to have any of these technical glitches that have hit the program early, if you get cut off that way, feel free to call back as soon as we get back on the air. I won't ignore your calls, and I never cut anybody off, even when I probably should. Well, I haven't yet, unless they started a string of cursing. Not an acceptable behavior here on the show. All right. Anyway, here's what I can't stand. There are no outrages of the week this week, a segment that is on almost every week, and that's because this and the primary topic that I'm taking up next are the outrages of the week, and they are completely and totally outrageous. And here are the reasons that they are outrageous. Number one, this deal has absolutely zero teeth. Worst case scenario, Iran doesn't go along with what they said they'll go along with in the framework if they accept it, if it ever becomes a deal, and the sanctions that they have been dealing with for the past ever how many decades they've been in place go right back in place. Oh, we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing. Hope that hurts you some more. The people in the State Department and the people in the White House seem to be completely unaware that it's only the people of Iran who suffer under the dictatorship of the Mullahs. The Ayatollah has an iron fist. The Green Revolution that took place, which that has nothing to do with the environment, maybe that's why the Democratic occupier of the White House wanted nothing to do with it, is a prime example of how the Iranian people would love to throw off the yoke of the theological dictatorship that exists as their form of government. So the sanctions that get put in place, the sanctions that continue to be put in place, only hurt the people. It doesn't hurt the government. They make sure they have plenty of stuff. They get plenty of non-sanctioned goods coming through unofficial channels from places like, I don't know, Russia, for example. The Iranians and the Syrians for a long time have helped prop each other up. There is absolutely no harm that will come to the Iranian government, the regime there, should this deal fall apart. Or should they accept the deal, and under the cover of this deal, they violate it like crazy, jump even further ahead on their nuclear program, and then by the time you catch them, it's too late, and then you put your sanctions back in place. Sanctions will not put the genie back into the bottle, Secretary Kerry. Sanctions will not save the world, Occupier Obama. Israel is in imminent danger. America is in imminent danger. And the danger comes from a group of people that run the country of Iran. A country that, I might add, if you bother to take the time to check your history, means Aryan race. Iran was part of the former nation known as Persia. Persia was a bit larger than just Iran, but they changed the name as a gift to Hitler during World War II. That should give you some indication of the mindset of the people that you're dealing with. These people are believing that the first greatest evil that they see, and the only way to hasten the return to the promised ones, to bring about their end of world, end of day scenario, which they believe is something they have a responsibility to hasten forward, is to kill all the Jews and then destroy America. Nothing gets that done faster than nuclear weapons. Everything they do is in a movement to acquire those nuclear weapons. And yet we have an administration that says, well, there's a difference between rhetoric and actions. These people are reasonable, and the rhetoric is just saber-rattling and for participation at home. I'm sorry, but this announcement of a framework agreement is nothing but saber-rattling for appeasement at home, because, or at least the equivalent thereof, okay? Because, well, let's face facts. The people that live in America, that embrace the left, that don't quite understand they're being used by a group of people that have no interest in the American people, only in trying to end constitutional limitations on our government, those people, they tend to embrace love, peace, and tree-hugging, and there can't be war because war is bad. And yes, war is bad, but it's not a cartoon, and you got to stop talking about it like that. War is horrible. It is nasty. It is ugly, but it is unfortunately sometimes necessary. Which also will bring me to another point in a minute. I'm trying to figure out why this is the deal or there's war. I don't understand who's been talking about attacking Iran other than Israel, letting you know that they're not going to let Iran get nuclear weapons without taking their best shot at stopping them. And as far as I know, that doesn't necessarily require American intervention. But those people on the left that embrace this and, oh, war is bad, make love, not war, which is a great slogan for a T-shirt, but doesn't work much as a life philosophy, they don't want to hear saber-rattling. So they want to hear, we've created peace. This is peace in our time. And these people at the State Department have made promises. And Barack Obama is desperately trying to seek something positive for his legacy as president. He wants you, the American people, that he believes have been dumbed down sufficiently to believe that this is enough. He wants you, the people of America, who he believes have been dumbed down sufficiently to think that it's all fixed and that it's all taken care of. So he comes out and makes this announcement about a framework having been agreed upon. He did this to trick you, within minutes of this announcement first being made, the Iranians came out and said, no, that's a lie. The Iranians also made it clear that they will not be signing any kind of deal anytime before June. They said that. They made it clear there will be no deal before June, which automatically should raise questions and raise eyebrows for everybody on the planet that's paying attention, because what's happening in June that they then believe they can sign an agreement? Are they bringing other secret locations online that you simply don't think they'll be able to find? Are they bringing locations online outside of their borders in one of the neighboring states that's an ally that will allow them to continue their work under the promise of their protection? I mean, I don't know. I'm throwing stuff out there because there's got to be a reason why they want to wait till June. If there really was some type of deal in the making, even if you're just talking about the framework. And you have to be real careful and understand these people, when they come out and they tell you, they're playing with words. They're playing, they're skirting around meanings, and they're playing fast and loose with what things mean. That's what the so-called progressives have done from the beginning. That's why they call themselves progressive, instead of calling themselves eugenicist, elite socialist, out to destroy the world except for themselves. A little honesty in the description there, and suddenly people don't find you as warm and cuddly and have a hard time believing that you're trying to save the environment. So they need to hide behind words, and they need to hide behind the message, because they have to control what's being said. They know what you think something will mean, so they use those words, and they'll tell you in very fine print, very hush-hush, what they really mean, so that they can claim you were aware, or so that they don't have to speak in code when they're talking amongst their own. They can just use the language. To the American people, they want you, the folks on the left, to believe that the mighty Obama has once again lowered the rising tides and ended global warming. Just, I mean, since there is no global warming, somebody had to have ended it. I guess Obama will get credit for that. Of course, now I'm a climate change denier, I'm sure, but I don't deny changes in climate. I just tend to believe that the natural cycles on the planet and within our solar activity have way more to do with climate change than anything that we people are doing. Now, that doesn't mean we have a green light to go destroy the environment, and I'm not out here suggesting that we do that, but I am suggesting that a lot of you guys that are out there being eco-warriors are a bunch of raving idiots, and you just haven't figured out you're being used. Stop taking the word of these people that are trying to use you, and do your own research. Now, I apologize over the use of the word idiot, because I have said already, I'm really trying to be more respectful, because I think respect is where we need to take the argument, and name calling doesn't get anywhere. So I'll take it back, and I'll apologize to you who feel that that was directed at you. But in the meanwhile, the point I will still stand by. You are being used, and this is about using you to try and change the perception of the fact that this is a bad deal to begin with, because there's absolutely no way that they can enforce these inspections. And I'm sorry, a rollout time, a breakout time of a year is still not a significant amount of time to prevent them from having weapons if they put all the other pieces in place. My guess is, since they have 8th generation centrifuges available, they plug those bad boys back online, it probably isn't going to take a year to roll out anyway. I'm assuming that the idea of a one-year breakout time is meant to give us time to negotiate a new deal. Let's try getting to a deal period. Let's get past a framework that's been rejected not only by the Iranians, but by the French as well. And heaven help us that now we, the United States, are living in a world where we're worried about nuclear proliferation for a country that is a professed enemy of Israel and ourselves. And it's France who is standing up and trying to negotiate stronger terms and a deal that might actually have a little teeth and something that might mean something. And let me tell you something, looking at what France is standing for, it's still not sufficient enough to prevent nuclear weapons from being developed by Iran. But at the very least, they're standing firm on the topic, and they're not just saying, here you go. But how desperate is this administration that they created these talking points and they released these talking points calling it a framework so that hopefully you would miss that part of it and think it's just a deal. Hopefully you would miss that part of it and think, they've made progress. Or even more to the point, hoping the less how do I say this without being insulting? The folks that are paying the least amount of attention and understand the nuances of negotiation the least, the most ignorant of the world stage. Ignorant sounds insulting, but keep in mind, ignorant just means that you don't know very much about that topic. I'm ignorant of a good many things. I'm sure a lot of you would call me ignorant about a great many more things. But Each of us out here, we're not Renaissance men anymore, and women. There's too much to know for everybody to know everything about everything. So we all have topics that we're ignorant on. So that's not an insult. It can be used that way, but it's not being used in that text. How sad is it that I just spent that much time trying to explain that? Anyway, they're hoping to fool you. Iran has stood up for what they want. They haven't agreed to anything, and they came out and they called our administration liars a very short amount of time of them announcing the framework. But the Iranians didn't shake hands on agreeing to the framework. The people that agreed to the framework is a small part of the P5 plus one group, which means it's nothing. It's the equivalent of me showing up at your house, wanting to buy your car, and saying, well, I want you to sell me your car for $5. Do you accept my deal? No. All right, well, here's the framework that I've established. I'll be back to check later. And then I go and have a press conference saying, we have agreed upon a framework of me purchasing this vehicle for $5. Because that's what happened. The Iranians have in no way agreed to this, and the French haven't either. Obama has talked about the world community being unified behind this and how it'll be seen as America's fault if the Congress gets in the way and stops this deal. So far, there's not a deal. And there can't be and shouldn't be a deal without Congress. You have the official spokesperson for the White House in press conferences now saying that there are certain people that shouldn't have a right to chime in on a subject. This is one of those subjects they don't want us to chime in on. But the bigger question is, why is it they don't have a right to chime in? Because we're talking about Congress. We're talking about the Senate. Within the past week, there were three different occasions where it was said a little differently, but the bottom line is the press secretary basically said, since Congress doesn't believe the same way we do, they shouldn't have a dog in the fight. Hello, they've been sent there to be our dogs in the fight. We, the people, voted and elected them. Some folks elected people for the left. Some folks elected people for the right. Some folks elected people and thought they were getting one and got the other, and so on and so forth. But the bottom line is Congress is there to protect we the people. from a runaway executive branch. This executive order about UN climate change crapola, he said the same thing. Since there are some people in the Senate that still disagree that climate change is even real, these people that ignore science probably aren't the best people to chime in. Hello, these are the only people who have the right to chime in under our form of republic. They get to chime in. We get to voice our opinions left and right, but when it comes down to it, they are supposed to be our voice and to keep you, executive branch personnel, from running amok. That's their job. That's what they're there for. And yes, they are qualified to do so simply by virtue of having been elected. But the biggest point of all, even if France got the deal they wanted, and then P5 plus one got full agreement, Iran said, you know what, we're good with this, we're signing this deal, and there was a deal. Can we trust them? I think unequivocally the answer is no. We can't trust it. We can't trust anybody that's involved here, not just the Iranian government. And important note, I'd say government, because again, I don't have a qualm with the Iranian people. A lot of them tried to overthrow this government not that long ago, didn't get any help from America, begged for it, asked for it, didn't get any. The Iranian people, they're in a world of hurt. I feel for them. We can't trust the Iranian government, but we can't trust our own government right now. John Kerry said a multitude of times in the press conferences since this framework for a deal was announced that there were no sunsets. Did you hear me? 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years. And then there were a couple of items that are supposed to be permanent. But almost every part of this deal does have a sunset clause where it just expires. That's the definition of a sunset in legal terms. It has none. And then he turns around and tells you one after another about these different sunset clauses in the framework of the agreement. Can we trust these people? The answer, no. We can't trust the Iranian government because the Iranian government is a sworn enemy to all people of Jewish faith, all Israelis in particular, and a sworn enemy of the United States of America. And I'm sure they'd be happy to take out any other Western nation that would be willing to stand up to them if they had the capability. And anybody who doesn't think that they're trying to take steps forward to gain that capability, well, you're not living in the real world, pal. I suggest you look into your history, you look at what these people have said and done, and once you get so far into it, you find out, America screwed up back in the day with the Shah of Iran and all that wonderful stuff, turned the Iranian people against the U.S. then. This was inevitable, whether we'd done anything with the Shah or not. But look at the history, look at the good and the bad, see everything, and then understand. Try and resonate some understanding here. Again, here's the call phrase, the call tag, use your brain, because this is dangerous. And right now we have amateur hour operating, trying to create peace in our time. Going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about the religious protection laws and the things that have taken place in Indiana and how sickening some of these reactions have been. Stay with me. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for staying with me. Everybody who braved your way through the technical issues at the first of the show and are still with us, thank you very much. Appreciate you. Again, I'm always very, very appreciative of the audience here. I've got some very loyal listeners, and I appreciate that. Got ever-increasing listenership taking place over at Stitcher.com. I want to thank everybody listening in at Stitcher for your following of the show. I can't even begin to express how happy it makes me. The numbers, since coming back this last time, the numbers have caught fire and they continue to grow. And right now I've got more people listening to the show at Stitcher than I have in all the other formats combined. And you can find the show right here at Blog Talk. You can hear it live, and I hope some of you are enjoying the show, listening live. I see that there are still a few folks in. Because of the technical issues, I don't have the chat room up today, so sorry about that. I hope that those of you who normally participate in the chat room aren't too awful mad at me about that. And you know, ordinarily, it gets really good feedback and really good involvement with the show, so I don't like leaving the chat room off. But unfortunately, the tech issues have prevented me from firing everything up. But Stitcher has really exploded the listenership. I got well over 25,000 plays last week. And I say well over because I haven't checked again since about Tuesday. Ordinarily, I check every day. I've been just a crazy week trying to take care of things at the other job. And then with family stuff and getting ready for today, Resurrection Sunday. As a Christian, I celebrate it. Today's one of those fundamental, quintessential days that must be observed. You know, it happens to coincide with Passover for our Jewish friends as well. So to all the Jewish folks that happen to be listening to the show as well, I hope you're having a very blessed Passover. And I do hope that everyone is having just a fantastic day. It's a beautiful day here in East Tennessee. Sun's shining. It's still a little cooler than I would like, but much cooler than it has been the last couple of weeks, actually. Not that you guys care about the weather report. But, again, you folks at Stitcher, you're really catching up. You're helping the show to catch fire. You're getting this distributed out there, and I appreciate that more than I can tell you. More plays than with the other mediums across the board put together. You can find us, of course, right here at Blog Talk after the show's broadcast. You can find us at iTunes. You can find us at TuneIn. You can find us at podcast.com, which actually I wasn't even aware the show was showing up over there, but if you search for Tapping to the Truth, you can find both the Blog Talk and the Spreaker versions of the show. They're both come up on the same page. You can listen to either one, and they do keep those updated rather well. So again, I appreciate them. That's not something that I actually signed up for, but I found both shows there on the same page. So somebody did that on our behalf. So thank you, whoever did that. Thanks to the fine folks over there for giving another outlet for the broadcast. I also want to go ahead and mention the fact, if you haven't already, you probably should go check out teapartycommunity.com. It is a social media site similar in a lot of ways to Facebook, only without all the annoying liberal people. Do occasionally come across some trolls and spammers, but the mediators do a pretty good job of keeping that under control for the most part, and it's a nice place for you to vent your frustrations towards where the country is going without having to worry too much about some idiot calling you some ridiculous name. There may be some folks that will disagree with you, but typically speaking, they have reasoned and rational conversations about why they do. Imagine that. Also, want to go ahead and mention the fact that all the music here is podcast safe, utilizing the service of. I was distracted. I'm getting a message here. Anyway, utilizing Magnatune as our podcast music service. And, of course, one exception, the song Miracle, which I used through permission of the songwriter and performer, a friend of mine, Mr. Cash Uslow, who I'm hoping to have back on the show soon. We'll be talking a little bit about the world of music when we do. And that's enough of the self-promotion stuff and the outside promotion. Those guys aren't sponsors, by the way. I don't bring them up other than the fact that I know people that are listening to the show may be thinking about doing their own podcast. And the important thing to remember podcasting is the fact that any music you use has to be podcast safe. You have to make sure that you're legal. If you're going to use a bunch of regular tunes like most of the terrestrial radio shows use, you have to pay a fee to make sure that the songwriters and the artists are getting their royalties for each time it's played. This is kind of the same deal. Magnatune does the same thing, only for completely independent artists. So I like the idea of helping the independents that are out there. They don't have a record label backing them. They're just trying to make it on their own. And a lot of them are pretty dang good. I mentioned TeaPartyCommunity.com because I love the community. I've mentioned before that I was one of the earlier members. There for a little while. They talked about a possible sponsorship while they were looking for an official spokesperson. They decided to go with someone else, and then I lost all that. It's still a great, great social media site, and I still enjoy being there very much. I hold no ill will or anything like that. It'd be real easy to be jealous about that kind of thing. And I mentioned that just because we want to talk about human nature at this point. Human nature plays a big part of the public reaction that we have seen to this point for some of these religious protection laws. A couple of weeks back, I had Oklahoma State Senator Joseph Silk on to talk about the pushback and the reaction to a religious protection law that he had introduced in the state of Oklahoma. His bill got killed, so there's no chance of it becoming law in Oklahoma, at least not this year. However, it didn't stop people from making phone calls, sending emails, making death threats, threatening his children, name-calling, the whole nine. Of course, it seems kind of silly to mention name-calling after death threats towards your children, but painting the picture as it will, it was not a pretty scenario. I thought that nastiness was bad enough, but I will give you at least this much in that Senator Silk is an elected official, and we've talked in the past on the show about dealing with the repercussions, regardless of how ridiculous those repercussions might be in some cases, of doing your job, a job that you asked for, a job that you begged for, a job that you begged people to give you money so you could go around and beg even more people to do the job. That's what an election is. These religious protection laws are ridiculously redundant and shouldn't be necessary anywhere in states. The Constitution alone should be enough to serve as the only protection you need to practice your faith reasonably within the United States. But the problem is we've allowed people to interpret the Constitution to allow for the states to do things that they probably shouldn't, which then opens the door for local municipalities to do things that they probably shouldn't. And in truth, as I have expressed on a multitude of times, the United States Constitution is in fact a document that is meant for the sole purpose of limiting the authority and power of the federal government. And it says specifically that anything not specifically mentioned therein is something that either falls back to the states or to we the people. We the people have rights. Those rights are not granted to us by the Constitution. Those rights are not granted to us by the government. Those rights are endowed upon us from our Creator, whether you believe in that Creator or not. Religious freedom is a guarantee in this country. Didn't start out that way. Started out as being freedom to worship any denomination of Christianity. We've kind of hit on this a little bit before. In fact, it wasn't until somewhere around 1965, if I'm remembering correctly, that the Massachusetts State Constitution finally recognized freedom to practice your faith of non-Christian faith. Now, that doesn't mean that freedom of religion shouldn't be extended to other religions. I know somebody's going to try and twist my words into meaning that. I'm not saying that. What I am going to say, which is probably going to be pretty controversial, and if taken out of context, will probably get a lot of people mad at me, but there is no such thing as gay rights. There. I intentionally paused long enough for you to be able to record it and to make me out to be a monster. Go ahead. But for the folks that actually listen to the show, or the people who want to call me out, I'm now going to continue my quote. There is no such thing as gay rights. Just rights. Human rights. Basic human rights. One of the biggest mistakes the majority of people, particularly on the left, make when they're trying to rally behind a cause is they claim to want equality while asking for special treatment. The overwhelming majority of Americans hold no malice or hostility towards others of different races, different faiths, and different sexual orientation, save for the fact that they don't appreciate being made to feel as though they are somehow a second-class citizen by being a more traditional, religious, heterosexual individual. I am a married white Christian man. I have at no point had the influence or sway to be able to commit acts of racism on anyone, let alone at an institutional level. But then neither would I had I been given that opportunity. I, like most Americans, harbor no ill will and no anger towards people that are members of different various minorities. I have said before a million times, and you'll hear me continue to say this as long as we're questioning religious freedom, and that is Christians, real Christians, forget about the folks out at you know, the folks that are out on the fringes that say whatever they have to say. Christians don't hate gay people. Because Christians don't hate people at all. Christians hate the sin. And yes, many of us will refuse to acknowledge it as being little more than a lifestyle choice or a weak, sinful nature that you're refusing to try to resist. That's where these aversion therapies come from. That's where the ideas of trying to help you by doing the don't be gay treatment come from. It's not misguided, but until you decide that you can make a change and want to make that change, then it would never work. And I don't want to get drug into the conversation about whether or not that's accurate or can be. Oh, you're born this way, nature, nurture, whatever. All that is a different argument for a different time. The argument for today, the argument this time, is, as we have been accused of, is religious freedom code for gay bashing? And you see, the reason this accusation comes up, the reason that we get accused of this is because, well, the so-called progressives, they do use a lot of code. And they just naturally assume that means everyone else does too. They do try to cover their hate and their meaning through the manipulation of phrases and words. So they just assume that everyone else does. But when I tell you that I want to help preserve the rights of a Christian to practice their deeply held convictions and their beliefs in the state of Indiana, that's not code for me saying that I don't want gay people to receive goods and services in Indiana or any other state. It's not code at all. It's simply me saying, bottom line, discrimination is not the same thing as practicing your faith. If we're talking about the type of discrimination, if you want to use the word as it's kind of been converted into, also thanks to the so-called progressives, because it used to be a time when discrimination was considered to be a good thing. You're a very discriminating individual. That's very good. Discrimination is not a bad thing. Discrimination can save your life. But in legal terms, discrimination in public life against a minority, now that is a bad thing. And it's unacceptable, quite honestly, and should not be accepted. The biggest example that everybody's talked about this past week, so I was hesitant whether to mention it or not, but I think it's a really good example and that we should discuss it and should look at it, was this pizzeria, the Miracle Pizza, I believe it was. On the one hand, it's an absolutely horrible story, and it shows the absolute worst parts of what we've been talking about here for the last couple of weeks since this business started, about how you go about advancing your argument, how you go about advancing your agenda. This news reporter, just in case you've been under a rock and had no idea this has went on, news reporter locally wanted to get the man on the street opinion, claims to have Googled local businesses, came up with this pizzeria, went there to ask this young girl who happens to be co-owner, daughter of the other owner. They run it together. They own it together. She was the one that was there and went there to ask if they would cater a gay wedding. Now, you see, I start to have problems here because for the longest time, it was almost mandatory to refer to these as same-sex weddings, same-sex weddings. Same, that's the PC term, right? Then why is everybody, even the folks on the left, now referring to it as gay wedding in some type of hurried description? I mean, technically, aren't all weddings supposed to be gay? Because gay is supposed to be colorful and happy, which a lot of homosexuals generally are, colorful and happy, hence gay becoming the term to describe them. I'm probably getting in a lot of trouble with how I'm presenting this right now, but they wanted to know if they would ever cater the place. And first of all, they were a pizzeria. Up to that point, I'm not real sure how often any pizzerias have ever been contracted to cater a wedding of any kind. So it seems kind of an off-base question, but a lot of folks have accused the reporter of basically hand-picking the pizzeria because they had Easter decorations up and statements about their prayer. So it was obvious that there was a strong religious commitment to their business and how they ran their business. So this report goes out, and the girl says, basically, you know, I guess if somebody asked, we'd have to say no. But we have lots of gay customers. We don't have a problem with gays coming in and buying the pizza. We just, when it comes down to it, don't feel it would be appropriate for us to be involved with their ceremony. Because in this case, much to my point, being forced to participate in a ceremony that you believe to be a violation of your religious faith is something you should be protected from. Society should not expect it. The government should not force you into it. Now, the firestorm that followed after was a huge amount of payback. They received so many nasty, nasty responses. Twitter exploded. In fact, one teacher in the area tweeted out, "Who wants to go out with me tonight and help me burn down the pizzeria?" Really? This is a teacher. It's supposed to be a model of teaching our kids how to use reason, how to think, how to use their brain. And they publicly put out on social media for the world to see an invitation to help them burn down a local business. They received so many nasty and threatening phone calls that they literally had to take the phones off the hook because they couldn't get their customers' calls through anyway. They ended up having to close down the restaurant. And as far as I know, and I have not checked on this today, as far as I know, they haven't opened up since. So there's a good example of how the liberals want to attack and kill. They want to kill the business. They want to turn these people's enterprise. They would be happily content with destroying these people's lives. They certainly tried to destroy their livelihood. There is light. And thanks to a young lady that works over at The Blaze, that's Glenn Beck's network, in case you're wondering. I know most of the people listening to the show probably already know that, but I throw it out just in case there's someone new listening or someone who doesn't know all the connections. She was really the first to start reporting on the story. A lot of other people picked up on it after that, including Glenn himself and folks like the great one, Mark Levin, and of course we're talking about it here, although since I'm only on Sundays over here, I'm a little late to the party, so it's not like I'm breaking news. A lot of folks know about this, but these people got out there, and this wonderful lady who works for The Blaze got the idea of starting a FundMe page. So one of these little private source funding pages where folks go to try and get their businesses started. Well, she went over there to try and to set them up a page, and then she started promoting it. Mark Levin promoted it, Glenn Beck promoted it, several other people promoted the page. And at last I checked, it was over $80,000 that had been donated to this restaurant. Now, I don't know what that's going to do for their taxes. I'm sure the government's going to make sure they get a nice big chunk of that. But for the pizzeria, that number alone represents several years worth of profit. So now they can safely wait till this does die down before they open back up, assuming that somebody doesn't actually show up to burn the place down, which is still possible. Liberals hate to lose. They tend to be a bit more violent as well. Not all, but the most extreme of your extremist fringe, they tend to do that. So hopefully that won't happen. I'd like to say that you guys will realize that you lost and will step out as close to gracefully as you can, and that be the end of it. I'm afraid that's probably not what's going to happen. People have already started throwing out wild, crazy accusations like that was the plan all along. These people have become a poster child of the right's attempts to further their efforts here, and they pick these people and promise them that they would do this and would give them tons of money. Like, come on. That is so much crap. But again, that's kind of how most folks on the left, when they lose, that's how they acknowledge that they've lost. They fall back to these positions where they simply can't admit that they were wrong, that it's wrong to attack people based on their faith, that it's wrong to attack people based on the fact that you disagree with them, that it is wrong that here in the United States of America, you do indeed have the freedom to practice your religion and shouldn't need a law to protect you to do so because the Constitution already does it. most of the people who've gotten upset about this law on the left are people that haven't bothered to look at it and don't understand it. And even after it's been defended, and after people like me and all the terrestrial radio talk show hosts have again and again read the law to you and show you example after example, these people still choose to ignore it because they want to believe what their great and powerful leftist leaders have told them. There is nothing in this law that is discriminatory towards anyone. There is no discrimination in place, not in the legal sense. There is no legal discrimination in play if I choose not to do business in a certain way. These people are not turning down gay customers. They're simply not providing a specialized service to a ceremony that they can't condone within their religious life. That's it. That's all. There's no harm there. Maybe your feelings get hurt, but guess what? That's life. Too bad. Tough. Suck it up. Move on. Somebody else will do it for you. Move on to them and leave these people alone. And in the case of the folks at the pizzeria, they don't service gay weddings anyway. They sell pizza at their pizzeria. That's it. Why did they get targeted? They got targeted, I guarantee you, even though the reporter denies it, because she saw they had religious stuff up and she knew this one was a live one. This one would say the things that she wanted said. And she got it. The firestorm ensued, and thank goodness for each and every one of you out there that did something about it. You went to the page and you donated money and you demonstrated your support for the individuals who were being attacked for no reason, and your support for the cause of the First Amendment. The First Amendment is the only thing we should need in this country in order to make sure that we get to practice our faith within reason. What we see going on in Indiana is a bunch of bullies trying to rough up people. I mean, some of the most ridiculous things, like the CEO of Apple. We can't believe and tolerate this kind of thing. It's unconscionable. Really? Are you closing down Apple operations in Saudi Arabia? No, because we make lots of money there. How dare you hold Indiana to a ridiculously much higher standard than any other place that you're willing to do business. Places where it's still a crime to be gay. Places where you get stoned to death or beheaded or, if you're in an ISIS-controlled area, thrown off of a building. And if you don't die, you get thrown off again. That seems like a far worse crime than saying, sorry, I don't want to bake a cake for your wedding because I believe that, well, it's part of my faith that, well, I can't condone your ceremony. You can't force someone else to participate in your life. This is the kind of thing that the traditional liberals used to be railing against if it had happened. Nowhere in this law or any of the other 22 state laws or in the federal law is there any specific mention about any minority. Nowhere does it say that it's okay not to do stuff for gay people. It doesn't say that. But what it does say is that you're free to practice your faith without repercussions from the state. And in the case of Indiana, all it does is it sets a legal standard in court. You still, if somebody brings you to court, if they're suing you, saying that you're engaging in discriminatory practices, and they're suing you over it, and you go to court, you still don't get an automatic get-out-of-jail-free card just because you say, I was practicing my religion. You still have to be able to prove it. You have to show where in your doctrine that that particular activity would be an issue for you. You can't say, well, you couldn't say, for example, that I'm engaging in beating you up because you came into my house and you're gay. I'm trying to think of a ridiculous example. Okay, Mr. Tapp, tell me, what faith are you? Well, I'm a Christian. Specifically, I'm a Baptist. All right, show me, Mr. Tapp, where in the Bible here that it tells you that it's okay to beat up somebody because you don't like them. Well, it's right here, you see, Your Honor, in this. Mr. Tapp, that was handwritten in. I don't believe it was printed there. It still has to fall clearly within doctrine, okay? So it's all a bunch of hooey. Why Indiana? Why now? Because they saw the trend. Now, a lot of the other 22 states that have state religious protection laws already in place did it better than a decade ago. The federal law, actually, most of the states passed their laws shortly after the federal law. So in many cases, we're talking about two decades. So for two decades, about 18 states and the federal government had a law in place that said, hey, you know what, there's a legal standard involved in your protections. But it protects everyone equally in those situations. Because guess what? I don't give a rat's backside what the activists think or what certain radical members of the community think. I happen to know for a fact that there are a lot of gay and lesbian people that are people of faith, that they are religious, and this law protects them as well. The fact that the left automatically assumes that all the people that fit into this little group all feel and think the same way and are all on their side automatically goes to show you how freaking small-minded they are. You can sit and you can argue these points left and right all day long, and it doesn't change a thing. The bottom line here is that the Indiana law, same as several other laws, simply creates a legal standard in the event that somebody makes the accusation towards you that you're behaving in a legally discriminatory fashion that is not legal. The very fact that Indiana does not have a law on the books already protecting the gay and lesbian community against discrimination, given how strong and powerful that their supporters are, and that their activists are, tends to lead me to the belief that there hasn't been enough discrimination going on in Indiana previous to this law for it to be an issue. Why on earth would anybody believe for a second that suddenly this is going to green light a whole new wave of discrimination? It's not. But that's going to be the excuse, because that's the point they're using to whip everybody up into a frenzy, to get all the activists and all the violent people and all the loons on the far left ready to fight and attack and burn down pizzerias that have nothing to do with the argument, because that's what they need. You see, Indiana and Arkansas, they're part of a new wave. When it was just 18 states 20 years ago, when the left was mostly behind this law because they thought it was supporting Native Americans who were using peyote and things of that nature, Oh, they were all for it then. They want to protect minorities as long as it serves their purpose. But nobody in D.C., and nobody that's part of an activist group that's on the far fringes of the left, is interested whatsoever in actually protecting people. They're not interested in protecting groups. They're not interested in protecting people other than themselves. What they want is a rallying cry to get you fired up and helping to promote their efforts to dismantle this part of the Constitution. And you guys over here help dismantle that part of the Constitution. And you guys over here help dismantle this part of the Constitution. And while you're all working together to do something that you had no idea you were actually doing, that's what you've been recruited for. That's why they think of you as useful idiots. And that's their term, not mine. But that's what they think of you as. Just like the Obama administration thinks you're dumb enough to believe that their big announcement meant that we have achieved peace in the Middle East through the framework of this Iranian deal, which is not only not a deal, but it's not even an agreed-upon framework. You certainly would believe that reading it like we did. Same thing here. Barack Obama has come out and publicly said that this law in Indiana is unconscionable, unthinkable. We can't tolerate this. Hello, Barack. Didn't you vote for Illinois' same law? In fact, I heard somebody say, I haven't had a chance to research this, I can't say for certainty, but I heard somebody say that he was a sponsor or a co-sponsor of the bill himself. These folks that are trying to destroy the Constitution or the constitutional restraints on the federal government, they don't like this law because it reestablishes and helps you to realize the Constitution already protects your religious freedoms. They don't like religious people in the first place because truly people who are people of faith will never, ever put their entire trust in the government. They will never set back and let the government take care of them because they have faith in their God. And most religious denominations therefore require you to do a lot of work to be responsible for yourself. Give the glory to God, but toil with your hands. Earn your living. Earn your keep. People of faith are going to do exactly that. People of faith will never bow down to the church of the left that embraces the death of unborn babies, that embraces the destruction of liberty. People of faith are an enemy. So they will be Alinskyized, demonized, turned into the enemy, made to look like evil incarnate, while they themselves are actually dedicating their work to Lucifer and performing evil on this time. They don't like the law because it reminds you that you have these freedoms. They don't like this law because it reminds everyone that there is, in fact, still a Constitution, and it is supposed to be guiding the federal laws. They saw a whole new wave of these laws because their push to force acceptance on people is getting pushed back. These laws would never be necessary if it wasn't for their efforts in the first place. Tolerance is not the same thing as acceptance. The American people are amazingly tolerant of a good many things, including the opinions and behavior of others. That doesn't mean they accept that behavior. It doesn't mean they're going to embrace that behavior. And guess what? They have the right not to. That's not bigotry by definition. Bigotry is when you decide you hate somebody for not knowing them. Bigotry is when you decide that you're going to behave in a fashion that is going to harm others without taking the time to even know why you want to harm them other than some general reason, some prejudice. There's nothing bigoted about choosing not to participate in someone else's ceremony. Whether you like it or not, That is a simple fact, and this is the United States of America, and we have that right. If I come to you tomorrow and say, I want you to come to my renewal of my wedding vows. We're doing a full ceremony. I want you to take pictures for me. And you, as a same-sex marriage activist, thinks that it would be hypocritical for you to take pictures at my ceremony. You say no. Do I then have the right to force you into it or try to bully you into it? These rights are all the same. There is no such thing as gay rights, just human rights. And for American citizens, a whole other set of rights that we tend to think of. Freedom, liberty, demands that we stay focused on what is important. And that begins with our individual liberty, our right to make choices for ourselves, our right to be safe and secure within our homes without the fear that the government is going to show up and take our things away because we made a choice. There should be a burden. Somebody should not be allowed to illegally discriminate. When I say legally, I mean legal term. Illegal discrimination is a crime. Should that type of discrimination take place? No, it shouldn't. But I got to tell you, I still don't think the government or you as an individual have a right to demand anything from anyone else. You don't have a right to show up at my house and demand that you get to take my car somewhere. I don't know you. You don't get my car. You want to talk about equal protection under the law and your arguments for same-sex marriage? You are already treated the same under the law. I can't go marry someone of the same sex either in my state currently. That's equal treatment. That's the legal definition of equal treatment. Are both parties that are different parties being treated the same? In this case, yes. Folks don't like that answer. But it's a true answer. There are no such thing as gay rights. There are only rights. And guess what? The other guys on the other side of the argument have the same rights that you do. You don't get special rights. You don't get a special set grouped off to yourself. That is not America. That is not our legal system. That is people on your side bullying. And I'm going to say one more time, again, I'm going to speak directly to the gay and lesbian community. Again, be real careful who you let speak for you. Because you end up getting people like this crazy teacher that sent out the tweet about meet me at Mystic Pizza or Mystery Pizza, Magic Pizza, whatever it was. Meet me there. We're going to burn it down. That's really the people you want leading the charge on your behalf? Calling and making death threats to a young girl who simply made what was an innocent enough statement? This is Easter Sunday today, for those of you who are listening live or who catch it later today. For those of you listening later on, this is when it was broadcast. Easter Sunday here in America. Resurrection Sunday. A time of joy for Christians. But it is a time where Christians in this country and abroad are under more attack than ever before. There is literally a Holocaust going on of Christians in areas controlled by ISIS. That attack's far worse than what's going on here. But the difference is, here we are supposed to be protected by the same laws that protect the other minorities. Here we're supposed to get the same consideration. We're supposed to get the same respect that everyone else is afforded. These religious freedom laws that are being passed is an attempt to do exactly that, to remind everyone that, hey, guess what? People of faith are entitled to protection and they have rights also. that's the problem the left has with it. They have lost their guiding principle of protecting minorities. I'm not certain that there's anybody left that's part of the National Democratic Party that even believes that it's part of their responsibility to protect a minority. It's just a talking point to help them get elected. Hey, we're for the black community. We're for the gay and lesbian community. We're for the Asian community. How about you just for the community? How about you see that America is made up of all those groups and then some? How about you realize that you're part of a game that you're being used? You also, as an elected official that's not bright enough to understand that the talking points are just talking points and pushing a completely different agenda behind the scenes, you are also one of their useful idiots. So stop. Stop being a useful idiot. Stop hating first. Stop taking the word of ne'er-do-wells and rabble-razzlers. Stop taking the word of community organizers and people who have no interest in resolution, only in maintaining upheaval. And start looking at the reality around you. Get to know your neighbors. Talk to them, if you haven't already. Sadly, in the United States, lots of us don't know who our neighbors are and are happy that we don't. When you take the time to get to know people as individuals, then you have the right to decide if you like them or if you don't like them. Then you have the right to know if there's something wrong with that individual or not. But a lot of the petty black versus white, Jews versus Muslim, Christian versus gay activist, whatever your versus group is, a lot of that melts away because you get to know the people, you get to know the people's heart. You come to realize that most of us just want the same thing. And I myself just want to maintain constitutional limitation on our government and the freedom to practice my faith as I see fit. And defend your right to your freedom of speech, to your freedom of faith, and to your freedom to be an American who is seeking your happiness. So you have the right to the pursuit of that, not a guarantee. There is no freedom from religion guaranteed in this country, only freedom of religion. There's no guarantee of results. There is only the guarantee of your right to pursue happiness. You do not have a right to never be offended. In fact, when the First Amendment is properly applied, I will guarantee you there will be times in your life, maybe many of them, where you will be offended, and offended so egregiously that you will cry out and speak in opposition. But that is your right also. But you don't have the right to silence the other guy, just to engage. Going to go ahead and start shutting this down. This is a topic that's not going away. We'll probably be talking about it even more. But I hope, at the very least, I made some cogent points that if you're not on the same side of the argument I am, that at least maybe it's give you something to think about and understand. Because here's the deal. If you're just out there screaming and yelling and you're not making any sense, well, if you're not making sense, you're just making noise. Stop making noise. It's time to start making a difference. So be ready to do a little effort there because you're going to have to do the same thing. And it is time to use your brain. Ladies and gentlemen, that has got to be for today. Thanks for listening in. Again, many apologies over the technical glitches early on. For those of you who stayed with, thank you. And I hope you enjoyed today's show. Remember, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Take a little time, do your own research, be prepared to put in some effort, and always use your brain. That's what you got to do if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for this week, everybody. Have a great weekend. Everybody have a happy Easter, and we will see you again next week. Goodbye.
come back, you know my name. I don't think I can say all I need to say. With the time left, counting down by the day. It won't go by, I don't know why time flies. It's a heartbreak, but it wasn't good.